Hey, my loves, it's your girl E, and this is The Call, where we hear from wildly inspiring and dynamic and interesting women about their journey to answer their life's calling. So I was talking to a friend this week who's having a really hard time at work. She's smart, she's talented, she's driven, but she works in an environment that is like 90% men. And yeah, sure, hashtag not all men, but these men have been pretty terrible to her. They've been disrespectful, undermining, condescending, dismissive. I could go on and on, all the things. And we were talking about how, yes, she's strong, and yes, she continues to do her thing, and she isn't going to let them stop her. But an unfortunate side effect of being in that environment is that her confidence has really taken a hit. And as a friend, I can see it. I was telling her how a lack of confidence is kind of like an underlying disease or sickness, but there is a ton of symptoms. You doubt yourself more. You're unnecessarily cautious about making decisions. You look for approval or validation or, the worst, permission to do things. Now, I personally don't struggle with confidence that much. I'm pretty self-assured most of the time. And when I'm not, I really know how to fake it well. But even me, even very confident, very self-assured women sometimes question themselves or find themselves, I guess I should say ourselves, buying into what someone else or what society has said we should look like or do or be. Now, if that's you, if you are maybe in a moment of wavering confidence, or maybe you're always in a moment of wavering confidence, this episode is going to be like a vitamin shot for you. Because nothing makes me feel better about myself as a strong, outspoken, smart woman of color than being around a strong, outspoken, smart, confident woman of color who is completely unapologetic about it. And that's my guest this week. Jameela Jamil is probably best known here in the U.S. for her role as the hilarious Dahani Al-Jameel on the hit NBC show The Good Place. But prior to that, she was already a glass ceiling shattering, successful, and pretty famous TV host in the UK, her hometown that she compares to a very small but very powerful female body part. I'll let her tell you about that. Her journey to media stardom in the UK and then in Hollywood is pretty entertaining, to say the least. But in the process, she not only found professional success, she also found a mission: to fight the patriarchy. In particular, all the ways that the patriarchy and society at large has shamed women about their bodies, making us feel as if we aren't good enough exactly as we are. No airbrushing and no filter. Her new campaign, I Weigh, is all about what she calls the real body positivity movement, not the super commercialized feel-good stuff that's used to sell tummy tees and yoga pants. She's very much fighting not just the patriarchy, but anyone, including other women, who support it. Which means, yeah, we do end up talking quite a bit about the Kardashians. But it's not just her feeling about beauty and body and gender that show her confidence. You hear a lot more of her story about how she lives life with reckless abandon and the things that she does on a daily basis to make sure that she's not getting caught up in all the media and pressures that try to make her feel bad about herself. And having spent time with her in person, I can tell you that her vibe, which I'm sure you'll be able to pick up from our interview, is very, you know, love me or hate me, this is me, I don't need your fame, and I will burn it all down for the sake of what I think and what I believe, which in my opinion needs to be bottled and sold as a mood. Anyway, prepare to laugh and think and do all the head nodding and build your confidence up with this really fun conversation. Jameela Jamil on The Call. Jameela, thank you for being on The Call.
Thank you for having me. This is exciting.
I know. I was just telling you, I joke, I kind of now feel like you're my best friend in my head. So this is going to be great. This is great for me, okay?
Okay, great. Well, I'm glad I could finally be here.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Okay, so most people probably know you, at least most people here in the U.S. probably know you from your hit show, The Good Place, mm-hmm. right? But you had an entire career before that.
Yes.
And it's so funny because I see so much media framing it as like this ingenue, you know, this new star. And I'm like, well, she actually has had a solid media career mm-hmm. and life before The Good Place. So let's talk a little bit about that. Let's talk about life before The Good Place.
Yeah, there's never been a 32-year-old fucking ingenue.
right.
It's really weird. But yes, I've had loads of jobs. I've had loads of different careers because I don't have an education.
Okay.
I speak like I have an education,
you
but this
do.
Is a fake
it's
accent.
The accent.
I literally learned this accent basically from going to a really, really fancy secondary school
uh-huh.
and around girls who had so much more money than me. And I think I cultivated this accent more and more.
It's so interesting how an accent really does send a code. It's coded, right?
Oh, for sure.
When people hear you speak, there's this whole assumption about what your background must have been like
oh, yeah.
and your education. You're like, no, not really.
really.
People assume I'm far smarter than I am, which is great. I guess when my career really started was I was an English teacher until I was about 22. I taught English as a foreign language, which is a very weird and stressful and fun and illuminating job.
Yeah.
And then one night I met a producer in a pub who told me that he thought I was funny and that I should apply for this huge audition. It was this nationwide audition in the UK to replace a host called Alexa Chung.
Oh, yeah. I know I know her, yeah.
Yeah, so she's I believe she's now like a model in the United
States.
That's
why I know her, so I didn't know she was a host.
Yeah, and so I went along to that audition. I sent in an email. They sent an email back asking me for a video. I sent in a video. After the video, they asked me to come in for the audition. I went in, and somehow I got that job. And I'd never done anything within media before. But I think because I didn't have any nerves whatsoever, I don't really resonate. Shame doesn't resonate with me. Like, I was very shameless. I was very, very authentic and very ridiculous. Because I knew that this was probably the only time I was ever going to meet these people. I'd never have to see them ever again.
Right.
And then I had to see them every day for the next 4 years.
But it was good. You were able to just kind of get it out the way. This is who I am.
Well, I've kind of approached everything with reckless abandon. I sort of navigate my life with hope, but no expectation. I have high hopes, but no expectation. And that's how I live my life. So therefore, I don't really have to deal with disappointment very often. You sort of wish for the best. And so I went in. I had no idea what to expect. I hoped I'd get some free food, which was always a bonus for a 22-year-old struggling teacher. And I got this job and I started as a TV host interviewing my favorite celebrities and actors and going on movie sets across the world. And I got to do that for 4 years and then eventually moved out of that because I found the space of being, it's very easy to become famous in the United Kingdom because the United Kingdom is the size of a clitoris compared to the United States of America. And so within this tiny clitoris, I'd become a person of note before I was ready. It wasn't something that I'd planned on. I think even if you do grow up like wanting to be famous, wanting to be a star, it's still very overwhelming when it does happen because you can't go anywhere without people recognizing you, listening to your conversations, asking you for photos. And that's fine and that's nice. But it's also quite invasive if you're a shy, socially anxious person who just wanted to make some money.
And especially because it sounds like that was never an ambition of yours.
No, I was happy as a teacher. You know, I would have still been doing that now happily, but this was an incredible tangent to go off on. And I've learned so much and it's 100% gifted me everything. But I think it was just too much attention. And the UK's press is very, very cutting, very cruel, very invasive, particularly target women. Mm-hmm. The paparazzi are very aggressive. They spend a lot of time outside your house and they call you very rude words to your face all the time because they're trying to provoke a reaction so that you hit one of them and then they can either sue you or they get horrific photographs of you looking like you're about to eat them.
Right.
And so there was I got a lot of skinny shaming when I was too thin, and then I got a lot of fat shaming when I gained weight on medication when I was like 26. Mm-hmm. And this was at like an arc of my career where I was doing the best I'd ever done. I'd made history as the first ever solo host of the UK chart, which had been on air for 60 years. No one cared about any of my accomplishments.
Wow.
No one cared about any of the jobs that I'd done. I was a proper broadcaster, a proper DJ, a proper writer. And the United Kingdom press just reduced me to nothing more than the flesh on my bones. And so I moved into radio to kind of steer away from that. That didn't really help. It didn't stop the fat shaming. It didn't stop the invasion into my private life. And then after a while, I got sick when I was about 29. I was very, very stressed, very unhappy. Someone had found a doctor had found, not just someone randomly in the street, a doctor had found a lump in my breast, which was almost like a little ball of what I take as stress.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not cancerous, but it did wake me up and make me think, God, what if that had been cancer?
Mm-hmm.
What about all the things that I haven't done? What do I need as a person? Not how much money do I need? Not how many celebrities do I need to be photographed next to?
Right.
None of whom I had anything in common with because they're really weird. what will nourish me? What will I want to have done when I look back on my life when I'm on my deathbed?
Mm-hmm.
And so I decided to quit my job. I left my relationship that I was in, and I booked a one-way ticket to America with no visa, no contacts, no friends here, no idea what I was doing.
You just did
it. Literally no idea what the fuck I was doing, no idea what I was going to do. I just had kind of like a vague plan of like, I'll just DJ across the world. and I came here and I started writing, and I wrote a treatment, and I wrote a pilot, and it got seen by a manager, and he was also a producer, and he signed me. And then it was via that manager and my agents that we heard about this show, The Good Place.
Yeah.
And they said, do you want to act? And I said, oh, no, no, thank you.
Oh, no, you
Yeah, I was like, no, I never want to act. I have no idea what that even would be. Like, you need training. This is a real craft. And I'll just, you know, I'll make a twat of myself. I can't do that. But they literally forced me into the audition.
Wow.
And I went again, this time just being like, I'm never going to get this. This is fucking ridiculous. This is one what we call, I think maybe what Americans would refer to as a hustle, we call a blag.
Okay.
In England, so I'm like a blagging queen, basically. I've managed to achieve things that I'm definitely not worthy of. And there you go. I went to that audition. I had a very tumultuous day on the day of the audition. I remember I wanted to curl my hair, but I'd never curled my hair before because I'd always had people do it for me because I'd been on television for like 9 years. I know. What a dick. What a dick.
I've never curled my own hair.
Well, because when I'm like, I'm fairly like, I'm here right now with just like wet hair and messy makeup. Like I'm a scrap in real life. And so I was like, okay, I should curl my hair. I can do this. I've seen them do it hundreds of times on my hair. So I was living with a model at the time and I knocked on her door. She wasn't home. And I was like, she'll have loads of hair shit, this is fine. So I go and I get her her box that says hair tongue on it. It's got a picture of the hair tongue and the hair tongue's pink, and I'm like, this is great, this is wonderful, this will be easy. And so I open the box and the hair tongue looks a little bit different inside, but it's still pink, and I'm like, okay, it's the same kind of pink, this, it must just be different, this is fine. And it's wireless, and I'm like, wow, this is amazing, the technology of this, that there'd be like a wireless hair tongue. It's like battery operated. So it's got these ridges around it that go all the way down. And I was like, oh, well, this must be where the hair goes. And so I wrap my hair around the ridges and I switch it on and it just starts going and whacking me in the face. At which point I realise I'm trying to curl my hair for my audition at The Good Place with a dick.
That's what I was afraid of.
With a big vibrating dick. And so now I had to rewash my hair because I got dick all over it. Vagina. Got some dick and vagina in my hair. So I was just like, just frantically washing all the dick out of my hair. And then was 15 minutes late to the audition. As I'm getting to the audition, there's a beautiful woman walking up the road, and I don't know my way around LA. I don't know where I am, and it's the address is a little bit weird here, and the roads are way too big for just too big, too large. What the fuck is going on? What is a block here? It's like a whole city. And so I'm lost. I see this beautiful woman walking by, and I'm like, oh, excuse me, you look like you might be going to this audition that I'm going to. Do you know where it is? And she was like, oh, yeah, I think it's like all the way down this road. So I believed her.
Oh no.
And she claimed that she knew nothing of an audition. So I was like, okay, well, there's no reason for me not to believe you. I walk all the way down that road, which then lands me in a really dodgy part of Koreatown, at which point I'm like, okay, I think this woman is an idiot. So I'm going to turn around. I'm going to go back to the audition. I get there. I'm now like 20 minutes late.
Oh.
And she's walking in on my slot. She was an actress. Oh. She was going for that audition.
Oh,
and she
gosh.
Fucking deliberately sent me down in some really dodgy part
Are
of Los
serious?
Angeles. Yeah, it's like a movie.
Yeah, that's nasty.
So a giant fuck you to that young woman.
Because here you are. Because
I got the job.
And
that is karma. That is karma for what you did. You terrible, terrible human being.
What a great story.
So then I get in. I'm now stressed. I've been betrayed. I've had dick in my hair. It's been awful. And I have to walk in and sit in front of Mike Schur and read his brilliant lines, having no idea what the show's about, what my character's going to be. I know nothing. There's no real script. There's just fake sides. And I did this audition with him. And that complete lunatic, knowing that I really didn't know what the fuck I was doing and I'd never acted on television before, gave me a job. And here I am.
And here you are.
Sitting in front of you. That was a very long answer.
It was pretty great, though.
I'm pretty sure you just said, hi, how are you?
You told your whole story. I loved it.
Yeah, that's my life. Shall I go?
No. Okay. I think there's a lot to unpack there. There's a lot to unpack there. So first of all, so many lessons in that, right? Like, one, in the very beginning, be yourself. Two, live with reckless abandon. Mm-hmm. Three, don't be afraid to kind of take a leap and quit something when you feel like there's something greater that you want to do.
Yeah.
What else? What else did I hear in that?
Don't use a dildo to curl your hair.
Never use a dildo to curl
Very
your hair.
Very bad.
That might be the most important and memorable lesson of this entire conversation.
The thing that I would like most women to take away from this when they finish this podcast.
So the part I want to start digging in on, though, because like I said, there was a lot there, because that was basically your life for the past, what, 10 years?
10 years, yeah.
You talked about the British press. So you didn't plan on being in media. You mm-hmm. took this job. The next thing you know, you are now in the spotlight. Mm-hmm. You are a public figure, whether mm-hmm. you wanted to be or not. And there's all of this scrutiny, not about your work, mm-hmm. not about your intelligence, but about your body. In the beginning, you started off by saying you're pretty shameless, right?
Yeah.
I'm so curious, though, even being the personality that you naturally are, how did that type of scrutiny and those words and that... being in that environment where you're being shamed, if you will, for your mm-hmm. body, how did that impact you? Were you completely impervious to it and like, you know what? Forget you. Say the word that you usually would say there instead of forget you.
Fuck off.
Thank you. Not okay. my favorite word, but I love when I hear you say it.
Yeah.
was that your attitude or did it actually impact you negatively?
Oh, no, it massively impacted me. Also, like I'd had anorexia from like the age of 14 to 17. And normally anorexia, I fully understand, is a lifelong illness or it can be a lifelong struggle. But from reading magazines, you know, because I came up in the 90s where it was heroin chic, which mm-hmm. is a term that we use non-ironically,
right.
and jutting hip bones. Do you remember this?
I do.
Hip bones were like a kind of a badge of honor.
It was the Kate
and
Moss
it was a sign of femininity, just to take up as little space as humanly possible. So that really got to me. And we had like, it was the rise of the internet. So you had pro-anorexia websites, and thinspiration was a term that got bandied around. Everyone in my school had some sort of eating disorder. That's not an exaggeration. It was just sort of like it was a norm. It mm-hmm. was almost like a rite of passage, was to do something terrible to yourself, either self-harm or starve yourself or throw your food up. You had girls eating on the weighing scales at lunchtime. And so I didn't menstruate from 14 to 17.
Oh my God.
It was really, really serious. I was so, so, so thin. And then I got hit by a car at 17 and I broke my back. And I gained 75 pounds, I think that's what you'd say in America.
Yeah.
That's about 5 stone in England. And so I think that sort of just smashed my anorexia out of me, because I developed like this new relationship with my body, mm-hmm. this new very respectful, very loving, caretaking attitude towards myself, where I wanted to give myself nutrition and love.
Oh, that's interesting.
And I think that's where a lot of my shamelessness comes from. I didn't piss on my own for 1 year. My brother had to take me to the toilet and carry me and mm-hmm. put me in a bathtub for 1 year. So I think that contributes. Because after
that's
you're fine. Yeah, I didn't grow up as like this like really sassy, strong teenager. I was very self-conscious. Everything affected me. Everything hurt me. I'm a very anxious person, mm-hmm. something I still struggle with now. But that was one of the best things that ever happened to me. It just knocked some fucking sense into me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so it was definitely hurtful to 10 years, you know, because when you are suffering with anorexia and you are suffering with body dysmorphia, you really do believe that the worst thing that could happen to you is gaining weight and feeling shame over that. So then to literally 10 years later be publicly shamed constantly,
it's like
over
the worst nightmare.
Because you've gained weight, it confirms everything that that little 14-year-old brain was telling itself. Mm-hmm. And that's everything that I'm fighting against now, because I'm trying to save the next like wave of 14-year-olds. But we'll get back to that later. It definitely like scraped at my ego, but it didn't really hurt me. It pissed me off.
Mm-hmm.
I was angry. I was angry on behalf of the little girl inside of me who was so damaged by this same shit that I used to read when I was younger. And I was angry that I'd achieved so much by myself with no contacts in this industry. I don't have famous parents. I didn't come from any money.
Right.
I didn't have anything. I was a scholarship kid who just worked my way up in this business. And so I felt so demeaned and mm-hmm. undermined to be reduced to something so unfair. And I was a proper professional. I was a broadcaster. I wasn't a supermodel. Like, no one should be talking about my body at all. I wasn't
right.
talking about my body. I wasn't showing off my body. I wasn't doing like weight, like the front cover of like health and fitness magazine showing off how I got my abs. I was just someone who focused on my brain and my own like attempt at talent.
Right.
So it made me very angry, and it started a new chapter of my life in which I became a very, very, very hands-on activist. And at 26, which is 6 years ago, I started campaigning. I started talking to the government. I went to the House of Commons, which is our version kind of the White House, I guess, in the United Kingdom, and giving talks and trying to change the hate speech that we use about women in magazines. I released a plus size clothing line. I was being offered all these fucking deals to like lose weight as fast as possible. You know,
which is
this
so
is what
crazy
they do.
For me, even looking at you now, hearing what you're saying, everything makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I think there is still the instinct though when people see you now to wonder like how was this an issue for you?
I know it was just. What, as in because of my size that you see me
because
at now?
Because of your size now, because from what, and I'm just first meeting you, so what I've seen of you is just basically social media and kind of mainstream media and pop culture, right? Mm-hmm. And you're now held up as this ideal of some sort of traditional beauty standard, right? Maybe not the stereotypical Eurocentric beauty standard because you're non-white, but, you know, tall, 5'11", thin, long hair. So it's rare when you hear someone who society is currently praising for their outward beauty to say, no, I'm rejecting that. And I'm saying that's not what matters and that's not what's important.
Yeah, no, I find it very belittling sometimes. You know, it's fine to comment on someone else's like beauty, or it's fine to like the way that you look, and it's fine to wear a little bit of makeup and enjoy a nice outfit. Men can do that as well. But it shouldn't fully encompass us as beings. Mm-hmm. And that is what has been growing and growing and growing. You'd think by now it would be taking a step back, but it's become worse. It's become more powerful. More than ever, women are being told to focus on their aesthetic and value that above everything else. No matter what we achieve, even if we become world leaders, even if we become leading scientists, really nothing counts unless you are desirable to men.
Mm-hmm.
And this is everything I hate, everything I'm fighting against. But I started 6 years ago, and I rejected any questions ever in interviews about like how I maintain my figure. Like over 6 years, the weight has just kind of naturally come off. I've never gone to a gym. I don't do fad diets. Mm-hmm. I've just treated my body with respect and eaten nice, healthy, organic food. And eventually my body has returned to my original size.
Right, where it's right for you.
Yeah, I have a thin family. But I don't talk about it. I don't allow it in my narrative, and I never did any like exercise workout DVD deals. They do this. They literally come to you and they say, can we take some unflattering photographs of you in like a bikini, and then we'll chart your success? So you see these staged photographs of women being fat shamed sometimes in the media, where they have actually agreed to have those photographs taken where their mouths are open and their eyes are half open, and it just makes them look like an unflattering disaster. They've always been caught only like midair or bending over or doing something.
You're saying that's staged?
Those are often staged photographs. Wow. I know that because I was approached literally to do that.
Wow.
And then those women show off on social media their progress with their like workout regime. And at the end of that, they release a DVD.
I am rarely surprised by things. That surprised me.
Oh, it's so gross. It's so gross. And fuck those women who agreed to do that. Fuck you. Honestly, like you are an expression that I use as a double agent for the patriarchy. Mm-hmm. How desperate for money are you? Mm-hmm. Anyone who contributes to this narrative, like how much do you need the money? Mm-hmm. The money that is built on the fucking tears of teenage girls. Mm. I get very upset about it. I don't know if you have noticed.
I've noticed, and I feel like it's warranted.
Yeah.
Because those messages are absolutely everywhere.
It's constant now.
Yeah.
At least when I was a teenager, I had to seek it out. I have to go and like buy the magazine for £3.90 or 90 pence. And then I would, you know, have to find the Anno websites, which were hidden behind other websites. You know, it was almost like going on the dark web trying to find like bad information on the internet.
Yeah.
And now social media, there's no policing.
Right.
It's everywhere. You don't have to look for it. It just pops up on my phone, like just something that'll make me feel lesser just pops up on my phone without me even looking for it, because someone else will post it, or the algorithms will like push it into my periphery. It's insane.
And it's because it's so aggressively promoted and pushed in our brains and down our throats, I think part of being an activist is saying, I have to combat that. I have to intentionally combat it. I know a lot of folks ask, well, just be yourself. And why, when I talk to activists or myself and my activism, a lot of folks, you know, think everything doesn't have to be so
aggressive
and deliberate and extreme. And I'm like, no, everything that is pushing against us and trying to kill us.
You have to fight fire with fire.
Exactly.
Yeah. Like, I'm loud and obnoxious on social media about all of these things. I attack people who, or public or institutions that I think are hurting women very openly and very aggressively.
Yes, you were in the media for doing the same thing with the, what was it, Kim Kardashian and the appetite suppressant lollipop.
Oh, just stop telling women to not eat. Just stop it. Everyone has got to, we've got to stop telling women to eat less. Women need
so
food.
Eating is such pleasure.
Oh, it's such pleasure, but it's also nutrition. It's vital nutrition for our brain. If we're gonna, if we're gonna become equals alongside, if we're gonna be allowed to be equals alongside men, we need a fair run at this.
And food is an important part
food,
of that.
You need to be fed.
Vitamins. And,
you need to not spend. You need to not wake up an hour and a half earlier than a man to do your hair and makeup. You need to not spend 2 hours at the gym. You need to not spend your whole day thinking about your body, thinking about your weight, thinking about your skin. You need to be thinking about how to grow your business, grow your brand, grow your family, grow your internal happiness.
Right, the things that matter.
It takes up so much fucking time. I wish there was an app. You know, there's that app now that like can chart how long you spend on social media a day.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I wish there was an app that showed women how much they spend, how much time they spend every day thinking bad thoughts about themselves and about their aesthetic.
And even just, not even necessarily just bad, just being preoccupied with it.
Exactly.
Taking up the mental space.
It's holding us back as a gender. And I believe that is a deliberate, I believe there has been a deliberate subliminal attack by the patriarchy to make us focus on that so that we will not further ourselves. So that we will not just like bend to the whims and the needs of like whatever look men now demand of us.
Which
every
is,
10 years, the look changes. Can you imagine us telling men, oh, this decade, we're going to need you to look like this, please? Can you imagine that?
Right?
I can't even fathom that in the world, that every 10 years we would give men en masse across the world a new look that they have to achieve, otherwise they are worthless and they are there to be belittled and mocked.
And then when you think about it, you think about all of that and then realize how much we've still accomplished.
Yeah.
I mean, despite it all,
yeah.
Imagine what would happen if that wasn't holding us back.
Oh, my God. The more comfortable in my skin I become and the more confident I become, the more I achieve. I just don't spend, I don't look in the mirror now once during the day. I look at it first thing in the morning to put on my eyeliner and put on my lipstick, and then I look at it at night when I'm taking that shit off my face.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. I don't look in the mirror anymore.
That's going to be my new challenge. I'm going to try that. I'm going to try to look at it once in the morning and once before I go to bed.
Yeah. I feel around for the odd booger. Just to make sure nothing's like on my upper lip. My upper lip tends to like collect the dirt of the day, I guess. You know, smeared lipstick, food.
Right.
But other than that, you know, it's fine. Check my teeth in a fork or a knife. A fork would be ridiculous. Do it in a knife. That's an idiot.
Or a spoon.
Do that. Yeah, that's a lovely spoon. But other than that, no, I'm not. Look, I just don't look in the mirror now.
Yeah.
It's like, that's not my problem.
So
your problem with my face, your problem.
That's
not my problem.
That's such a smart way to think about it.
And I get more done. I was definitely more self-conscious in my 20s, and I was under scrutiny constantly. And then I was doing, you know, a little bit of modelling here and there and being airbrushed and then feeling like I needed to live up to the airbrushed image. Fuck airbrushing. Done with airbrushing. Gonna try and outlaw it everywhere. Mm-hmm. It's been outlawed. Like, it's not outlawed in France, but now you have to say
the note
has been. I would like specific notes. I'd like you to say out loud that you changed the shape and size of the brown woman's nose in this picture, mm-hmm. and that you made her thighs longer and you got rid of her cellulite
and you
her
made
stretch
her lighter.
Marks and you made her lighter and you made her hair glossier. You know, it's just, makes me so angry. I'm done with airbrushing. Don't let anyone airbrush me. I would rather never shoot again. I would rather never be shot for anything ever again than allow a fake computerized image of myself to go out into the world that women then see and hold themselves up to a standard that I myself have not achieved.
Mm-hmm. It's harmful to the women who view it, and it's also, frankly, it's harmful for you, your own self-image.
That's exactly my point.
Yeah.
And I think I wrote an open letter about this because I did. I shot my first front cover without any airbrushing. And that was very liberating to me. It's not that I haven't been asking for 10 years, but until I was on The Good Place, I haven't really had the pulling power.
Mm-hmm.
And so now people actually listen.
And they do what you said.
And also my 30s has brought me a fearlessness where I'm literally just willing to go down in flames. I'm now just fine to not work in this industry rather than be someone who contributes to the pain of women. And we're not taking it. Women aren't taking enough responsibility for our role in this. We need to rally against this and be the example that we didn't have when we were younger. The Kardashians, they are in pain. it's very clear that women who have so obsessively spoken about what's wrong with their appearance, for over a decade we've been hearing this about their juice fast and their starvation and what's wrong with this and on my skin and oh, I'm fat and these photos and that, just mm-hmm. this collagen, we've watched their faces morph into completely different people. Mm-hmm. That's because they were brought up in a time, in the same time as me, I'm the same age as those girls. We came up in a time where we were made to feel horrific about the way that we look and mm-hmm. we were told that one ideal fits all. And those women have been... they've been poisoned by that and now they can't see themselves.
Right.
They were always beautiful. They were all born as like lovely looking, normal women. And they are now taking that poison that was put into them by other bad role models when we were kids and they're putting that shit back out into the world.
So what do you
say? Because I'm trying to be a filtration system. Right. I've taken the poison and I'm trying to filter it and put out something pure.
So what do you say to people who say, kind of in the battle of who's the best feminist, that what you're doing now is shaming women for the choices they make about their own bodies?
Oh, for sure. I understand that. I'm not trying to shame anything other than what I consider to be bad behavior by men or women, men and women. Nobody is safe from my criticism if I feel that they are doing something that is hurting women. Just having a vagina doesn't make you impossible to criticize.
Right.
And I think something that's been frustrating for me about feminism, the movement of feminism at the moment, is that now you can't say anything ever about a woman, no matter what she's doing wrong, because she's a woman. And that's seen as like anti-feminist. Feminism is just about equality. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Feminism doesn't mean that no woman ever gets pulled up. But like via criticism, I have improved. Via being told that I need to change certain things about myself, I have grown and evolved as a human being. Mm-hmm. We have to be able to call each other out as long as it is done with the intention of love.
Right.
With the intention of good. I'm not saying that they look bad. I'm not saying that this person or that person, I'm not saying anything trashy or like... non-constructive to
right.
anyone.
You're not talking about... You're literally not talking about what they look like now. You're talking about what their images are projecting to the world.
Not even just their images. You can look however you want, mm-hmm. but don't sell appetite suppressants to little girls. Don't have a surgeon change your face and body and then attribute that to a fucking lollipop that you are selling to predominantly young women. Mm-hmm. That tells them that they should eat less and then they'll look like you. You don't look like you. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'm offering constructive criticism that will help women as a whole. I'm not trying to slut shame or skinny shame or fat shame or mm-hmm. surgery shame anyone. I'm just calling out the bullshit and appealing to these people to grow up and take responsibility and use their platform responsibly.
So how did you get to the point? You said something a few minutes ago. I'm going to paraphrase it. But you said, well, actually, no, this is exactly what you said. You said, you know what? You're at the point now where you're willing to go down in flames. Mm-hmm. What that says to me is that you have gotten to a point where you're very, very clear on your values and your priorities, mm-hmm. right? That this matters more to me than this. Whatever the other this is, right? Something that I believe in, something that I'm willing to fight for matters more to me than what I stand to gain from going along with the system.
Yeah.
I think that's the challenge that all of us are presented with mm-hmm. in this society, right? Is to make a decision and to make a choice that we will stand for what we believe in over what we've been told is important or over what we've been told we stand to gain. But that's easier said than done.
For sure. And we're so fear-mongered. Women are so fear-mongered about having an opinion. I'm so sorry, you weren't finished.
No. Go ahead. But what I'm saying is that's so much easier said than done. How did you get to a point in your life or your career? Is it something just inside of you naturally? Or was there an experience that made you realize this is worth more to me? Because you live a good life, right? Mm-hmm. Good place. Ha, ha, ha. But you live a good life, right? I assume you're making good money.
Yeah.
You now have, like you said, the kind of the power and the sway in the industry to be able to call some shots. And yet you're willing to risk it. How did you get to that point?
I've been through a lot in my life. And I've struggled with a lot of mental health problems as a result of bad behavior by other people unto me, and bad examples, and being surrounded by toxicity since I was very, very small. And I struggled very severely with anxiety and depression in the first 10 years of my life, not the first 10 years of my life, the first 10 years of my career, mm-hmm. which was kind of brilliant in the end, because it showed me that money and fame and success don't make you happier. Mm-hmm. They don't cover any of your cuts and bruises. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really affect you in any way other than you can afford to buy more expensive things while you feel like shit and want to die. And so when I had EMDR therapy, which is a type of therapy for PTSD.
Okay.
And it's mainstream legit science, and it's free on the National Health Service in England, and they hate paying for healthcare.
What does it stand for, EMDR?
Eye movement desensitization reprogramming, I believe.
Okay.
And I had that kind of therapy, which helped me work on my trauma, work on my mental health problems, and managed to fully rid me almost of my anxiety and depression.
Wow.
And so once I was thinking clearly at 30, I think it took me until I was about 30. I did about a couple of months of it between the age of 29 and 30, just as I was moving over to America because I wanted to move here and have a full fresh start. I think now that I'm thinking clearly and I've gotten rid of so much of the toxicity from my brain and mm-hmm. I've removed all the irrational thoughts that have been put in by other people,
mm-hmm.
I now feel passionately about finding a way for other women to feel the way that I feel now. I've managed to rid myself of all of the like resounding shame that I had, and all of the pain and all of the self-hatred has all gone from me now.
Mm-hmm.
And now I fully love and respect myself. And I want to help other women get to that stage. And I can see everything that got me there. And so I'm going, and a lot of it was shame-based. And now I'm obsessed with shame and ridding women of it because I've seen the darkest point of where that can take you to.
Mm-hmm.
I've been fully suicidal in my 20s. I was just, my life was just a non-life. It looked from the outside like I was having this great time and I was being photographed at all these parties and I was a famous DJ. But really, I just wanted to die. I wanted to escape. I was miserable. I was trapped in my own body. And so I think that it's my obsession now is to try and save as many young people as I can from feeling the way that I have, because I've seen where all of this gets you, and it's so dark and it's so pointless,
mm-hmm.
and it's so needless and it's so unfair,
mm-hmm.
and it often doesn't come from us. It comes from other people's bad behavior that we process in a way that makes us take responsibility for their bad behavior and their bad role modeldom, which isn't a word. So I think that's where now at 30, I happened to stumble into this career. I wasn't gunning for it. I got very, very lucky by meeting Mike Scher, this complete genius who had an instinct about me. And that's not why he's a genius. He's a genius for everything he wrote. I think that I was his biggest mistake.
He's so smart. He saw me.
He saw me and he just knew that I would. He's this like complete genius who gave me a chance and I'm on this show. But I wasn't gunning for this. I came here to be a writer. I came here to write roles for women. I came here to write books that were for women and to try and heal things in a way.
Do you still want to do that? You still want to write?
Yes, no, I've just got a book deal, so I'm writing my first book. Thank you very much. And the book is about shame and my relationship with it and what I've learned, and I'm going to give that back onto women everywhere.
Yes.
And so that's what it is. It's having gone to the deepest, darkest depths of where your mind and your body can take you, and coming out the other side and feeling so blessed to come out the other side and wanting to share this goodness, not profit off evil.
Mm-hmm.
It's evil what people profit off of.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything wrong with fashion. I don't think there's anything wrong with a bit of makeup and a bit of jewellery. I love your hoops that you're wearing
right now. Thank you.
I think there's something wonderful about self-love and taking care of yourself and eating well and not drinking too much and not smoking. I think these things are important and good. But to be shamed and be forced to feel such hatred and like you don't belong in society if you don't fit within this like one ideal we give to women is bullshit.
Okay.
And to tell women to drink these like these teas that just make you shit yourself. You're gonna
that's
shit
really the impact
yourself.
Here. Right.
And you're not gonna lose any weight. You're gonna lose some shit, probably publicly, and then the next day that weight will come back because it was just shit weight.
Tell the truth.
So I'm tired of these diarrhea products that are being sold all over the internet.
Okay, so let's talk about the how. So in my book that I just finished writing,
yes,
it's coming out next year.
Congratulations.
I talk a lot about how we've been told and sold all these stories about who we are, how we have to be, how we have to live, how the world works, and most of them are lies. And that is important for us to kind of rewrite the stories about our identity, about money, about success, all of those things. But the how is the most important part, right? So it's one thing to be able to say everything around you is wrong. The stories that you've been told are wrong. The images that you're seeing are wrong. These messages you've been consuming are wrong. But then what do you do? So in my book, I call them like the rituals of resistance. What are the things that you do the average person, right? Not someone who can necessarily say, I'm going to not be airbrushed. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's lovely, but the average person, right? What are the kind of daily practices or small things that someone can do that can help not just push back on the culture for the sake of others, but frankly, help reprogram their brain? Because again, we're all seeing the same things.
For sure. I think it's very important. Like, I've unfollowed anyone that I find triggering in any way on social media. Mm. If they make me feel bad about my lifestyle, unfollow. If you make me feel bad about my skin or about my body, I unfollow. If I feel like you are promoting something shallow that makes me feel bored or belittled or like sad about where women are in the world, I unfollow. Mm-hmm. So I think that is very important to remember, that you are in control of what you, like, you are somewhat in control
of what you
consume, of what you see.
Yeah.
And so you must take measures to stop self-harming by looking at things that are dangerous. If certain women's magazines trigger you and make you feel bad about yourself and make you focus on your body or like how to please a man, and that makes you feel detached from yourself, don't buy those magazines.
Right.
You have to really protect yourself. I really bubble myself from what I allow in. Even friends who talk all the time about their weight and their image all the time, I've distanced myself from, because I don't want to hear that. Mm-hmm. I've distanced myself from people who behave badly to me. I call it the fuck shit detox. it's how I live my life. It's via the fuck shit detox.
Because right before you said that, I was going to say, it reminds me of this little song we used to sing in Sunday school.
Oh.
Which is like, oh, be careful little eyes, what you see. Oh, be careful little ears, what you hear. That kind of thing. But it's so true. Step one,
I prefer
actually,
yours, but no, fuck shit detox too. is how I arrived at this place.
Yours works too.
Thank you. So it's to remove all of the toxicity that you possibly can, step mm-hmm. one. Mm-hmm. Step two, write a list every day. I don't do this every day, but I'll do it several times a week, of the things that you like about your life, the things that you are grateful for, mm-hmm. the things that you would like to achieve, just to put a kind of like positive spin on your day. It's, you start the day feeling so powerful and with purpose, because I think without that, then you are much more susceptible mm-hmm. to chaos and bad thoughts if you don't start every day remembering who the fuck you are and what you're about to go and do. Mm-hmm. And so I think keeping and checking in with yourself very frequently is very, very important. And remembering that no one, we never remembered the people who were just like the other people. Individuality, as much as society and marketing veers against individuality and wants us all to look exactly the same way, the same, have the same hair extensions, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That's marketing. Marketing doesn't give a fuck about you. It just wants to take your money.
And it's so weird, because marketing now, it's really crazy. It tells you to stand out and then shows you how to do it by telling you to look like everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
Right, it's so bizarre.
Oh, there's so many manipulative, like, pretend, like, fake positive marketing slogans. Mm-hmm. You know, even body positivity. Body positivity was for women of color and women who had disabilities who were being discriminated against.
Right.
And women of a certain size were being discriminated against. And this was their movement to be included within society. But body positivity is now a slogan that gets used for women, including very, very thin toned Caucasian women.
Right.
And body positivity now just means we're showing off your perfect body.
And, mm-hmm.
That's not what this was about. That's not what the movement was for. I think it's great for everyone to feel good about themselves, but it's been used as a manipulative marketing slogan by people who are actually not being body positive. And so I started this campaign called I Weigh, and it's on Instagram. It's at @I_weigh. And I've been writing blogs about it, and we're turning into a proper movement and a safe space for women. And we're mm-hmm. growing it. And mm-hmm. I'm now starting to hire a team to help me work on it and bring it into like
That's
full,
amazing.
To manifest it into its full like fruition. And that is not a body positive movement. Sometimes people call it that. It's not. It's a life positive movement, because I'm fucking done with what body positivity has turned into. Body positivity still means we're talking obsessively
about
our bodies. Whether we love it, whether we don't love it. I don't care. I don't want to hear about it for a minute. I just want to break. I want to know who you are. What are you doing? What are you planning? What are you going to think about when you're on your deathbed? If you found out you had a lump in your breast that may or may not be cancerous right now,
what would you do?
What would you regret? Who would you call? Who are you? Mm-hmm. We've forgotten to ask ourselves who we are. We don't know who we are. We just care about what we look like.
Right.
This is programmed into us from the second that we pick up a doll or we turn on the TV. It's just everywhere. We're soaked in it.
Yeah. And the important part to realize is that deprogramming is work.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is the part when we talk about kind of the memes on Instagram or, you know, the fake positive stuff is that you look at it and you think, great, yes, you're right. I love me. I love myself. And you don't realize that you're still going back into a world whose job it is. Like, people are getting paid,
mm-hmm.
right, to change how you think.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to actively do the work. It's not overnight,
mm-hmm.
right, to be able to change how you see yourself, to be able mm-hmm. to change how you see other women, to be able to change what you believe is important and priorities. And so that would be the piece of advice I even give to folks who are listening to you talk right now, that you'll listen to this interview and feel great and feel empowered. And, you know, you may unfollow one or two people who you know are, you know, really, really triggering for you. But it's not over after 30 minutes. Or mm-hmm. after an hour, right?
It's a daily learning curve, for sure. And it takes just little exercises in which you take like inch by inch measures to see how safe you feel. Like I wore foundation every day for like 10 years during my 20s. Every single day, I didn't let my skin breathe. Now, my boyfriend was just like, it's just weird and powdery. You look like a different person when you're wearing it. You can wear it whenever you want to, but I just prefer what you look like when you wake up in the morning. So I tried not wearing it. And that's just like a little experiment. That was like a little experiment. And now I feel great and my skin can breathe and I don't have to take off loads of makeup at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. Just little things like that, just inching just within your comfort zone of little rebellions and writing down that little list of things that you want. And making those choices to distance yourself from people who make you feel bad or standing up for yourself when someone says something that you find triggering.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 3 years ago, I commented that a friend had lost weight. I was like, oh, you've lost weight. And I didn't mean it as a compliment or anything like that. And she was just like, please don't say that to me ever again. She said, don't make me think about it, because then I can't help but think that then when you say that I was big before and I must have been walking around looking big. She was like, I just don't want to talk about it.
Yep.
And I was like, fuck, I didn't even think of that. I didn't even think of that. And so now I never comment on a woman's weight. I'll say, you look great. That's the most I will ever say about a woman. I think that's a really important point. That was mm-hmm. such an amazing learning curve to me. That when you say that to someone, you're literally scrutinizing something about their body.
And
even if you mean it as a compliment.
Right.
Like it's actually bad to make someone think about that. I never comment on women's bodies now.
That's
I never
really
comment on my own.
That's a good note.
I also don't say bad shit about myself. I used to talk about myself terribly, even after the car accident, even with all my like rebellion against shame and everything. I still talked shit about myself, just everything about myself.
It's a habit.
It's a habit.
Yeah.
It's also like you're just made to feel so bad about yourself as a woman and made to feel like you're really lucky to be in any room because you're taking up some space that should be used by a man. And so I now don't talk shit about myself out loud. And when I hear it in my brain, I'm teaching myself day by day to be my own best friend.
Mm-hmm.
I have said things to myself in the past that if I'd heard someone say to my best friend, or even if I'd heard it said to you, I'd go insane at that person.
Mm.
I'd say, you can't talk to someone like that. That's a human being you're talking to. That's a vulnerable human being with a whole life. And yet I was allowing not only for other people to say that to me and newspapers to say that to me and people on the street, but I was saying those things to my fucking self.
Mm-hmm.
So it starts with you. You have to be your own best friend. You have to hear those thoughts and be like, you can't talk to her like that. This is my friend. I am her friend. And I have to do that. And it's now, it really works because now I don't think about it. It doesn't occur to me. Like I said, I don't look in the mirror all day. And that's not hard.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't occur to me to worry about what I look like. It doesn't occur to me to worry about whether or not people like me or not. I've started to accept that the people, obviously we all have work to do and
right,
it's important
right.
to like make sure that you're being a considerate and good person. That whole like, this is just how I am thing doesn't work. That's you're a bad person. You should always like make efforts to be as considerate and good as you
and
can
kind
be.
And, yeah.
But if someone doesn't like my personality or like my sense of humor, then that's okay.
Right.
Especially I don't have to please everyone.
I always say to myself, I'm doing the best I can.
Yeah,
I'm
you don't have to please everyone. You just
right.
have to be a good person and you have to put good out into the world.
You're very on brand with The Good Place, I might say.
Speaking
of which, what's next for you? So you're on this successful show that hopefully will continue for forever and ever. You've got I Weigh, the movement, which is now kind of being built into mm-hmm. an organization. You're going to have staff. What's next?
Oh, probably a Weight Watchers deal. I am going to grow the I Weigh movement into something bigger and turn it into a place where we can give a platform to brands and to people and to movements and to companies that further women emotionally and psychologically.
Mm-hmm.
Things that are completely, we're going to create a toxicity-free zone for women. I've got this book deal that I now have to write this book and put it out. And so hopefully that'll come out either at the end of this year or early next year. I started a podcast called Ask Holes. For Americans.
Ooh,
And I'm going to do some more acting if somebody would like me to do that. That is a thing that I would be willing to do. Perhaps I'll do some acting. I've got 8 months off in between the Good Place series.
Okay.
And I'm just going to keep being really loud and obnoxious.
I love it.
And loving myself and loving women.
We are all luckier for
and
it.
I'd like to change the laws on hate speech about women's bodies. I think if you can't talk about someone's race or religion in a hateful way, you're not allowed to write beached whale across Queen Latifah's body when she's on the beach minding her own business. Did you see that?
I tweeted it a
couple of weeks ago. I went completely insane at the magazine. This is a woman who has conquered. She's Academy Award nominated, I believe.
Yes,
she was in Chicago. She has had a successful music career and acting career.
Yep.
She's a comedian in a male-dominated industry.
She was a TV host.
She's a multi-millionaire.
Producer.
She's also... she also came up and became a household name in a time where it wasn't cool to be ethnic.
Right.
You know, where we weren't considered like a plus for a diversity tick.
Mm-hmm.
She came up in a time where there was nothing but shaming for women of color or women who weren't stick thin. You know, and so this is an incredible woman, an incredible role model. She's so strong. She's someone I've looked up to my whole life. And see her reduced to beached whale. Written across her body as she's on the beach relaxing with her family in her downtime. It's just like, what is happening?
It's disgusting.
Where are we? What are we doing?
Right.
So I'm going to try to change the way that we are allowed to talk about women's bodies and men's bodies, everyone's bodies in magazines. Men don't really get that much shit compared to women.
Right.
I know they get some shit, but it's nothing in compared to women. It's a drop in the ocean comparatively. Mm-hmm. And I would like to change the laws on airbrushing. Because remember, we are contributing to tabloid culture. Celebrities caused tabloid culture.
Mm.
And magazines, fashion magazines, caused tabloid culture. There would be no shaming if we weren't putting out bullshit in the first place.
Right.
So every time I've allowed an airbrushed image of myself to go out, I have therefore signed basically a deal with the devil that says it's fair for you to try and catch me out. Because I've put out a computer-generated image into the world.
Mm-hmm.
So every celebrity who's like upset that they're being shamed, think, if you're listening to this, think about the image that you put out. Do you face-tune your Instagram images? Do you allow yourself to be thoroughly airbrushed in magazines? Do you allow them to lengthen your legs and make you look thinner and make you look better in a dress that perhaps you didn't necessarily look like that in the first place? What are you putting out into the world? Why are people trying to catch you out so much?
Yeah.
I hate tabloid culture, but we have to take some fucking accountability. And I get accused of shaming people, but all I'm trying to do is get everyone to take accountability for their actions.
Well, I promise you everyone who hears this is going to be thinking about it and hopefully doing something about it.
Okay.
Jamila.
I need to calm down.
No, you don't.
Calm down.
There's nothing better than an angry woman. That's how I feel. And I'm angry a lot of the time.
I'm actually a happy woman.
Yeah.
I'm the happiest I've ever been. Yeah, I'm angry and happy because I think that more people should be happier and they could be happier. And I would like to see that in my lifetime. I would like to see women love themselves more. I'd like to see less 14-year-olds feel like shit about themselves. And if I can contribute to that in any way, then I will have done a good job here. That means so much more to me than a fucking Emmy or whatever else matters in this business.
I love it. Jamila, thank you so much.
Thanks.
This is great.
I just realized this was a first for us, talking about dildos on the call. And, you know, if we were going to do it, I'm glad we did it with you, Jamila. Thank you so much for taking time to be on the call. For those of you who want to find out more about I Weigh, check out I_Weigh on Instagram, the amazing movement that Jamila has spearheaded. And I can't wait to see where it goes from here. Also, make sure if you haven't already seen the really fun, beautiful photo shoot that she did, no photoshopping, of course, check it out on manrepeller.com. This episode was published by, of course, our friends over at Man Repeller and produced by the lovely Melody Rao. Y'all, I cannot wait for next week. It is our season finale. Season 3 has flown by, and we've got a really fun surprise for you. So make sure you don't miss it. In the meantime, I'm your hostess with the mostest, E. Actually, I realized, do I ever say my full name? I hope y'all know it. It's Erica Williams Simon. You can find me on Instagram at Miss E Will and on Twitter at Created by Erica. And until next week, y'all know what to do. Keep loving, keep fighting, keep dreaming, and above all, keep answering your call. Peace, y'all.